afternoon. You're listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio and Local Media This Week, the programme where we have a look at the local print media here in County Clare, the Clare Champion and the Clare Echo, and we see what they're talking about and we try and let you know. Our programme is sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography. Ruth, based in Fecal, a brilliant photographer. You can see her work right around on the print media and elsewhere as well. Delighted to have most of our crew here this evening. Pat O'Brien. Pat, good to see you.
Thanks, Jim.
And David Fleming. Good to have you, David.
Thanks, Jim.
We're missing John S. this morning, but off the bench again is Luke Fleming. So, Luke, good to see you.
A poor replacement, Jim, but I'll do my best.
So, we're looking at, I suppose, the front of the papers, and maybe to start with the Clare Echo, and where a piece there written by Pádraic McMahon, Dying at UL with No Dignity. And I suppose most people will be familiar with the story of where a man, Martin Abbott, 65-year-old man, was dead for some time before his body was discovered. It had been on a trolley in UHL. And it's no good story, David, is it?
No, unfortunately, it's becoming almost a regular story, Jim. And of course, we've been talking about this for so long now, and we said this was going to be likely to happen.
Aoife Johnson was the
little Johnson
girl.
Was the one, and there were probably a few cases before that, warnings. But and this has received a lot of national attention. It was on prime time there on RT over the last week. And made headlines as well. It made headlines because the coroner's court sat recently, and Pádraic says reports on this, a verdict of death by medical misadventure. See, sort of a strange technical term for saying the medical profession messed up again. It was recorded at the man's inquest. Martin Abbott, as you said, 65, and Anne-Marie Abbott, his daughter, was speaking. I think his wife was speaking, was being filmed for prime time. Anyway, she says, "My father wasn't close to death, but for him to have to die with no dignity is something that I don't know if I'll ever get over." And your heart has to go out to her and the rest of his family. Completely preventable by the sounds of it, but the nurses and the doctors are so much under pressure in there that you feel sorry for them too, right?
You do, yeah. I'm sure it was a huge shock for them to find somebody obviously dead for the previous hour on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, under a trolley.
And Anne-Marie, this man's daughter, works actually in the administration section of the will.
It's the ironic, so, yes. Isn't it?
So every time she's going to go in there, she's going to take
be reminded of it,
she's
exactly.
Yeah. So it's terrible, and I don't know what's going to be the answer.
Well, we saw the minister come down.
Yeah, it's 15 years now this week since we changed from into this system of centres of excellence in Limerick, to change off from the other three hospitals.
Do you think what the minister announced, Pat? He announced a number of new beds and a number of step-down facilities in Ennis and Nina. Will it work?
Well, I heard a doctor from Nina today on the radio, and he said that there's a new facility in Nina. Is it a 50 or 60 bed facility? Is it a 100 bed facility? Anyway, it's a new nursing home facility. But they're going to take 50 or 60 of those beds for a drop-down. In Nina.
To relieve pressure from Limerick.
Yeah, but it appears that there's a waiting list for people to go into this, for elderly people to go into this.
Of course, it's a classic case of robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yes.
And they're saying then that they'll take 40 beds in Carcara and Innes. But I don't know if there's 40 beds available in Carcara. I don't know. I don't very much if there's.
I suppose they would say it's an emergency situation, but sure, it's been an emergency situation for years. The other issue is the hospital campaign group say whatever the number that has been issued, 80 or 90 beds, isn't anywhere close to what is needed in Limerick. That actually you need 150 or more beds. Even 250 as well.
Yeah, I think we talked about that last week to Benison, how much the population in has gone up.
Yeah.
And we were saying something about, was it 250 beds or something? We were calculating.
And the one solution that seems to be completely off the table would be to reopen the emergency department in Ennis.
Well, it looks like that's not going to happen.
No. But I mean, there seems to be no other solution.
There's talks, I think, of classing them as a medical assessment unit and perhaps having that open on a longer basis. And of course, that was the great idea they came up with last year after they sort of admitted to making the balls of it over the previous 14 years. So another year on, and now we've another bit of something that might happen.
The injury unit in Innes now is, well, according to the minister, is supposed to open 24 hours from later on in this year.
Yeah. And that might help, because a lot of the cases, I don't know what the statistics are with accident and emergency, but I'd say quite a few of them are sort of minor injuries. You've cut your finger off.
Well, they've spoken about trying to, you know, literally have two doctors at the entrance of the hospital to try and steer you away from it. Like, that makes sense, but why is it taking 15 years for that to happen?
I think it's poor management.
Sure, of course it's poor management.
But it has to be, because Waterford, in the last week, Waterford had no patients on trolleys.
Yeah.
It's not all poor management, but it's population.
It's population, because it's the advantage Waterford has, it's probably a smaller district, because Cork is close to Waterford there, and Cork City is the regional, or the University Hospital Cork is taking a good share of it. Mm. But again, you don't hear of the crisis, major crisis in Cork. I know there are people on trolleys there too, but not as much as Limerick.
Mm. Which I suppose they probably need, we don't have any, you see, I think what a lot of them are campaigning is that you have a Model 3 hospital.
Yeah.
You have no Model 3 hospital.
We have no Model 3,
They either need to
do that, or they need to redefine the boundaries of the districts to perhaps have the Limerick district, or take. I don't know where, if you're in the Midlands, if you're in Offaly, where do you go?
In the Midlands.
Is that a big hospital?
Yeah.
Maybe a bit of Tipperary needs to be taken off there or something, I don't know.
But it does, you know, are they going to make other areas busier in order to relieve Limerick?
Yeah.
Surely the answer, you would think, and I mean, anyone listening to the radio 10 years ago, we'd have the very same story. Mm-hmm. Trolleys all over the place in Limerick, and we're still at that stage with no change.
Yeah.
I mean, surely to God, it's either to build a second hospital somewhere or reopen the likes of Ennis and Nina to take pressure off Limerick.
Yeah.
The hospital committee of the campaign, they're going to have in Limerick, they're going to leave Innes and leave Nina and all meet up in Limerick and go out to Raheen.
Yes, a drive, I suppose.
Yeah, a drive on the 13th of April. So that's happening on the 13th of April, and they're going to be leaving Innes at 11 a.m. So, I heard one of the campaigners on today said that they were going to be out in the car park out in they're going to finish up out in Raheen at the HSE
headquarters.
Headquarters, yeah.
Yes. So we'll see.
And there'll be no cars parked there that day.
No.
They'd
be all gone.
That's the problem.
Okay, I suppose we move on from the hospital and the associated stories of UHL. I've no doubt we'd be back to it again. Sinn Féin seems to be in a little bother. Internal warfare, I saw in some paper. Certainly, there seem to be finding
page one of the championship problems.
Yes.
And it's never a great thing when you see a headline, "Democracy of Local Organisation Called into Question as Party Likened to North Korea."
Yes.
So
there isn't much democracy in North Korea.
No, I don't think Kim Jong-un is going to come in any time to declare Sinn Féin.
No, I suspect Sinn Féin at one stage had connections with North Korea to be... This is Andrew Hamilton has the story. Resignations demanded in Sinn Féin internal war. And you will remember last week, Jim, that we were talking about the nomination of Dr. Martina Cleary for the local elections in this district, the East Clare area, the municipal district, Killaloe municipal district. Well, it appears that Sinn Féin had announced her candidacy.
They hadn't announced David. No. But she announced it.
She announced it first, but they then did announce it. Well, here's the story. Dr. Cleary announced her nomination while speaking on Clare FM on Thursday, March 21st. Now, remember the dates, Thursday, March 21st. The next day, March 22nd, Friday, in a separate interview with Shannon-based councillor Donna McGettigan, said that she was running. And then the Clare Sinn Féin party on Sunday, the 24th of March, issued an official press release about the nomination. However, and this is the crux of it, an internal email sent by Joe Buckley, Sinn Féin's Director of Elections for the Munster Cúige, which I think is the...
Fifth?
Yes.
Our province.
The province, the five green fields, states that nominations for the party's candidate in the East Clare area were to open at 7:30 p.m. on March 25th.
Oh.
And this is what created the problem. I think, Luke, some members in Sinn Féin got upset.
Yeah, listen, it's election season, right? And there's a bit of me is looking at this and looking at the hoo-ha that there was a number of months ago with the Fianna Fáil grouping.
Yes.
And you had a man that was a little bit upset that the people he had brought in couldn't get a vote because they weren't in the common for long enough. So I think, the optics of it aren't great.
But Luke, if you remember the party and you were expecting a convention to identify a candidate, as Nolene Moran says here, health campaigner, who's calling for the resignation of the Sinn Féin Director of Elections in Munster, or the chairperson of the Cúige, to resign because she didn't get a chance to vote, nor did the other members get a chance to vote.
Yeah, well, now, in fairness, Nolene is a lot, you know, Nolene has a bit of, a beef because she didn't get nominated along with Donna McGettigan for the election ticket. And I think she has a little bit of a point because... Yeah. I would think they're both two capable ladies, and I think they would put in a very good performance in the general election in Clare. And I don't think they would take away from each other, because geographically wise, they're well located as well. But yeah.
But I suppose there seem to be elements within Sinn Féin that don't want Nolene Moran to be a candidate under any circumstances.
That's sort of what it looks like. Mm. Yeah. Mm. You know, but then, you know, we'd say democracy, you know, we're a democratic country. If she's not that happy with it, and if she decides to run as an independent, I would say, look, I refer you back to Fianna Fáil with Mr. Moroney, and he's decided to run as an independent. You know, you covered that last week. So
It appears that according to Ms. Moran, I think it is, she says, it is not surprising that half the membership in Munster have not renewed. I mean, rejoined Sinn Féin. Which, if you are a party on the rise, you'd be very concerned about that. And you remember back years ago, trouble within the organisation about bullying.
That's right. That's right.
And again, members not being treated the way perhaps they expected to be treated.
And some councillors resigned as well.
That's correct.
I'm sure Violet Ann Wynne resigned from the party as well. She's now sitting as an independent.
She didn't get the support she wanted.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we're only hearing one side of the story. The paper did try to get comment from headquarters up in Dublin, and also I think the Director of Elections, but no comment was received by the paper as yet.
They might have to go to Belfast
to get the
response.
Yes, I'm just thinking foreign election, Luke. I mean, leading up to an election, maybe a year ago, Sinn Féin were on the rise and looking very like they would emerge as the largest party, and they still might. But, you know, gathering momentum as a party would like to be doing come up to election, this doesn't fit into that picture.
Yeah, I remain to be convinced, because I still think that they're going to do well countrywide. It's a little bit like, are they on a hiding to nothing, because everybody thinks they're going to do really, really well. So, you know, the question is going to be, I think they're going to be more concerned with having more potential candidates for a general election than they did last time around. And by going through the council, this is a way to do it. Like, you can see in Limerick, just during the week, Nessun Quinlivan, who is the TD for, I think it's Limerick City, or it used to be Limerick City East, I think is what it's called. He's announced that he's going to stand for the position of mayor. So I would give him a very strong chance of winning that.
John Morton is going for it as well.
Former Secretary General of the Department of Finance.
I'd say they're the two top candidates at the moment.
But I would just, if he does get it, well, then there'll be a few people, you know, councillors in the city that would be vying for that Dáil seat, and then they'll be electing probably a few more during the elections this year as well. So it's like all the parties, they're trying to get candidates profile through the locals. Now, we'll say at least, Clare, we were expecting a Sinn Féin candidate for months. They had indicated that they were going to have a candidate. Then there seemed to be issues with, we were getting no light on the horizon. It's a short period, I think we're less than maybe 2.5 months away from the election at this stage. And it is a relatively short period of time for a candidate to appear. So
it is.
We'll say it's good to see another female in the field. We're now up to 8 for 5 spots. But we'll say at least Sinn Féin have candidates, because some of the other parties, we say Fianna Fáil and maybe more particularly Fine Gael, are in trouble trying to get candidates across the county.
Yeah, it is. It is just strange. And yeah, Pat, sorry.
Just there on the elections, as we're on elections, there's a page there in page 14 of page 12 or 13 of the Echo, and on page 3 of the Champion, where you have people have announced their intention to send you Gillian men
Pam O'Loughlin. Pam O'Loughlin is going to Ennis
Dynamic. Yeah, Gillian, and he's going for Fine Gael there, and he's a former shopkeeper in Blackwater there.
Has he got a chance, Pat?
He don't live the hurdle of the
Aaron Gillan.
Yes. He's living in Kilnara.
Would he have a chance?
He's going for Fine Gael. There's another.
He's not answering me, Jim.
I don't know if he would have a chance or not. I just have to know how
out west they would go.
There's a lady in Pamela Loughlin. She's going as a farmers candidate in the Simon area.
What is this Farmers Alliance? Can you tell me that? She's running for the Farmers Alliance. Who are the Farmers Alliance apart? And I don't want any smart answers.
I suppose that I go for me to go to farmers.
Yeah, that's the smart answer. Yeah. But what do they want?
And then there's another young fella going in Shannon. Keith McNamara is going as independent, and he's a young fella as well.
Well,
as
David, if you read the article, the last few paragraphs there on page 3, the Champion, the Farmers Alliance is Ireland's newest political party, has a focus, surprise, surprise, on farming and rural issues. They first came together as a representative farming organisation, but obtained official status as a political party earlier this year, and they aimed following the footsteps of the Dutch farming party, the BBB, which came from nowhere to win the majority of the seats in the Dutch local elections last year.
Yeah. Hmm.
You know? So, again, you know, there's a few different independents and people running. Like, the question in relation to the Sinn Féin candidate is, the pyrite issue is...
Is it enough to attract...
No, but the thing about it is, Dr. Cleary is very much involved in, the Clare campaign in relation to pyrite.
Yeah.
And in the week that in Donegal they announced that the Pyrite campaign, I'm not exactly sure what way they have it worded, that they are running candidates.
Mm.
I think that's where there may be a little bit of surprise that maybe she didn't go on that
ticket.
Because she probably realised, Lucan, this is a question for you. Is there votes in Pyrite? Like, are you going to go to the ballot box yourself and be thinking about Pyrite? And put that to Jim as well.
Well, personally, no. But I would think that certainly in Donegal, Mayo, it could be a big
thing.
But
isn't that the answer of why she decided to go for Sinn Féin rather
than...
Well,
in fairness to her, she has indicated that she has been a member for the last 4 years. So, see, the problem with it is, David, you know, it's a bit like Jim or myself mightn't have been affected by Pyrite, so it mightn't bother us as much, but yourself and Pat could have been, so ye could get very agitated over it, you know.
But as you say, it is more of a Donegal problem.
Donegal, I seem to remember on a different tack, elected, is it Thomas Pringle, as I might have the name wrong now, as a deflector candidate.
Well, back in the day.
Back in the day.
You're right, Jim.
And a deflector candidate when there was no TV except RTE in the valleys of Donegal, and local enterprising people brought the channels from the six counties.
Yes.
I think it would be more in the minds of people now to get a few independent candidates stand in for the hospital issue to try and get things
that done. That would generate some votes.
Yeah,
the other political story, which Pádraig is claiming is an exclusive, but I think the cat got out of the bag before Pádraig's exclusive reached the page, is Deputy McNamara. The independent TD for the county is weighing up throwing his name into the ring for the European elections, he said here. The European elections, of course, are happening at the same time as the local elections on the 7th of June. What do you think his chances are, Jim?
I think his chances could be as good as any. We elected Mick Wallace the last time. Do you know?
And Luke Ming Flanagan.
And Luke Ming Flanagan.
So you wouldn't put into that group?
Not at all. And the one thing about Michael, and I mean, I know this because Michael lives near me, but he was very involved with the United Nations and with other groups, you know, back in the day before his entry into politics.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in Poland doing stuff in relation to elections and democracy. Mm-hmm. He was in Afghanistan.
Yeah. He previously stood for Labour in the Euros.
He did, and he got about 12 or 13,000 votes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I certainly wouldn't rule... What would be interesting, though, and again, this is if, but if he did get elected and took his seat in Brussels... it would really
shake up
this
particular Dáil election.
But this is his question.
I suppose he's wondering whether, and Luke, I know Luke wants to get in here now, in weighing up this decision for him, is it best to keep his national profile and perhaps be part of a small independent group that might support a hung Dáil? And might support some nomination for a Taoiseach, and he might actually get somewhere? Or should he go to Europe and have an impact in Europe?
Yeah, I would think Michael doesn't want to be kind of sitting as an independent, you know, with a voice but with no power.
Yeah.
I would imagine Michael would have ideas that he would want to see implemented and would want to be able
to
do that.
So that would suggest Dáil rather than Europe, because a first-time MEP in Europe probably hasn't got much influence.
No, but, I mean, he's...
Yeah, but a first-time... Look at Mairead McGuinness.
Mm. But she only became... She wasn't the first-time MEP.
No, I know, but...
She built up a profile, and Pat Cox the same beforehand.
Yeah. Mm.
You have to be there, though, for at least a decade before you get to those high levels.
But Michael has plenty of time.
Yeah, but true, Michael has more profile... nationally than the likes of Mairead McGuinness had when she stood. Her profile was, you know, from...
I'd contest that, because wasn't she on Ear to the Ground?
Yeah, but television was her profile. It wasn't political.
It wasn't political.
True,
you know?
Yeah. Okay, listen, we'll leave it at that. I'm sure there'll be lots of discussions.
He's going to be the top candidate. You have also Michael Leahy, the IFT And Eddie Punch, independent, and William the Bella Pepper from County Clare. So yes. We could have three candidates here.
David,
I think the point you were sort of taking a stab at was, and this would be a national question, that if there are some candidates elected that are currently TDs, you know, that there has to be elections for their seats. 6 months from the date of the elections, we'll have a general election before Christmas, either way. So make no difference. Yeah. Mm. They just won't move the writs for them.
The lady said Lady Punch on there a couple of weeks ago.
That's right.
He was very impressive.
Yes, yeah. I didn't hear it.
I thought he was very good. I heard him on Clare FM as well. You can listen back on podcast, Jim.
You can indeed. We'll stay with the front page of the Clare Champion because Andrew Hamilton has a story there. Famine or feast? Airbnb is transforming Clare. And Airbnb seem to have their supporters and their opposers. And I suppose the idea is, it's very easy to put properties up on Airbnb for short-term letting, and that causes, you know, a scarcity for people who are looking for long-term letting, for students or for young workers.
And the homeless. Well, the Clare Champion are going to town on this particular point because in the middle of the paper on page 10 and 11, you get the big story and you get the two sides. Mm. And it's well worth buying the paper. There's an awful lot of detail in this.
It's a great read.
There's a wonderful map of the county where you can get a bird's eye view of the number of holiday homes
in West Clare.
In West Clare for the most part. And you can just see it straight off that, for example, the place with the highest number of holiday homes is in Kilkee. And it has got 1,109, more than any other town in the county, or indeed in West Clare. It has got 86 people waiting for houses. You can draw a line actually. If you exclude Carrafin, you could draw a line between East and West Clare based around Ennis, and you can say that there is no holiday homes, apparently. No holiday homes between Ennis and us in Scariff. Now that is strange because I suspect there are holiday homes in this part of the world, but for whatever reason the paper isn't reporting on it.
You're going off to census info. So, like, you know, and I know it says Census Night 2020, but your Census Night 2020 was in the middle of COVID, and I think it got pushed out to 22. I think if memory serves right. But, Kilkee. Everybody knows that Kilkee has always been a tourist town that is rammed during the summer,
yeah,
but then is quiet during the winter. And like the local population, I know we said Councillor Killian Murphy, who's in his previous tourist activities, would always reference that Kilkee couldn't exist 12 months of the year because the local population had declined. It's a bit like the Hinch. The Hinch has a population in around 600, 800 people, but then can be up to about 8,000 during the summer. And you look at the figures that they say for Kilkee, that it can be up to 12,000 during the year. So you have a combination of, there's a lot of historical houses there. You also have to remember that there was a lot of is it Section 32's, Jim? Was that the great tax giveaway?
Yeah, that so many houses were built.
And, you know, there's a lot of people from around the country.
Less than 20 years ago.
Yeah, around the country built those, and that there would be tax breaks for them. And sometimes if they can't use them the whole time, they're using them as Airbnbs. You look, the figures you gave, David, the housing waiting list is 86 in Kilkee, right? It says that there's 1,109 unoccupied holiday homes.
And in Kilrush, there are 117 holiday homes and 154 people seemingly waiting. Now, it's probably not entirely fair to do this comparison, but councillors like Killian Murphy do point the finger at holiday homes, and particularly Airbnb, And he has his say there on one side of the page. But then you look at the other side of the page, and Andrew Hamilton has East Clare pensioners whose Airbnb funds their retirement, says they didn't cause the homelessness.
But I'll give you the great quote of Bill Clinton. It's the economy, stupid.
Mm.
Like, what it boils down to is, maybe for a number of years, we know there's a lot of people from Limerick especially would have historical, you know, holiday homes in Kilkee, that they might only have been down there for 2 or 3 weeks of the summer, maybe 2 or 3 months. And they've probably seen now that there's an opportunity to make money by renting it out over the course of the rest of the year.
And those houses would never be available to purchase.
No. Right. Yeah, you know, so, and you can't blame anyone.
No.
But, like, you look at the figures, and they said, you know, if you can get a potential income of 20,000, you could be clearing 10 or 12,000 profit out of that. It's hard to blame anyone that is lucky enough to be in a position to have a house.
Mm. Now, when you, just another aspect of it is when you throw in the current situation where many, many hotels are full of refugees, of Ukrainians, and the Airbnb is the only way that, you know, or supplements the number of places
for tourist places, exactly. And many, as saying to you, Jim, many young people, many young tourists now will not go to a hotel. Young families will be looking for houses. Hotels are not that family friendly. If you have particularly young children who you can't, you want in the same room maybe, and so Airbnbs are a solution there. There is another piece in the paper on page 11, quoting Maura Ní Mhuireacu from the Irish Celt Catering Federation, who has her say about it, because there's all sorts of issues around planning permission for Airbnb and so on. And she said that most owners of short-term accommodation are in favour of the proposed register of owners and for local authorities to have a measure of control over the future development of this type of accommodation. But she's going on, we have been calling for a register since 2016, long before the government thought of it all at all. In fact, in 2017, we went to the Oireachtas meeting and said that we should have a register. So there, the government are a bit late in regulating this whole area. And I think some politicians just jump on that bandwagon of criticising.
Mm.
Anyway, okay. They're fighting back, it appears, Pat, anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, well, according to Miss Ní Mhuireacu, the owners of short-term lets are being made scapegoats for the homeless crisis and the failure of successive governments to provide adequate housing. So it's hard to go against anyone with a house and let it out, and make a bit of money after it.
Yes.
You know,
and improve the tourist numbers as well.
I don't know the idea. And just on the map, I thought there was a lot of holiday homes. Definitely a lot of apartments in Killaloe. There would be holiday apartments.
You would have thought, yeah.
And Mount Shannon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mount Shannon. I was in Mount Shannon there recently, and I drove down the one, but. And there's a lot of houses in the estate there. I say there are a lot of
holiday homes.
Yeah, maybe not as many as you think, Pat, because there certainly were back in the Celtic Tiger. Mm. But I think
some of them have been
a lot, when the boom went bang, a lot of them wound up being sold. Oh, and you know, a lot of local people or, you know, people nearby were able to, in a position to buy some of them. So
but there must be some, even in Mount Shannon, I think there must be some up there with holiday homes. And
we have gone past the halfway time. We have been playing extra time for a while. So, Pat, will you lead us into the break, please, with your choice of music?
Are the calves out of the shed?
It's too wet, Luke.
And the date took place there recently of Mike Allen of Ultravox. He was the co-writer of Vienna, so we'll have Ultravox with Vienna.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Pat.
Good. I didn't hear he died.
Never even heard of him. Or then.
Yeah. Oh, you would. Did you?
Huh?
Huh? Midiour.
You're not old enough to have heard of those.
Being an Ajay's, David. No, you're not 25.
They would be very big in the 80s.
The voice reaching out in a piercing cry, it stays with you until.
You're very welcome back. You're listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio and local media this week, kindly sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography. And that was Vienna from Ultravox, a blast back to the 80s past.
David showing his age didn't ring a bell with him. Yeah. I'm surprised.
Yeah. I'm only a young fella. Yeah.
The baby of the panel.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get in a moment to some of the East Clare stories, but I suppose, Pat, the weather has been one of the topics that people have been talking about. We have, you know, we've got rain almost continuously since last July. And very little respite from it. But that's causing problems for farmers now.
I think we checked in and set up a chronicle recently with Pat Buck, and we talked about re-witting. We said that there was probably no need to go re-witting with all of it. It was falling from the sky. So.
Yes.
So this is a continuation of it. There's another article there, Jim, on the paper. I was just looking at it earlier on. 29 days out of 31 in March, you're laying in the Shannon
airport
station for the
helicopter. 29 days out of 31.
It says
it all, doesn't it?
They have a weather station there on the airport.
They were giving out about the weather station, saying it's out of order again. This is the new one they put in.
Oh, yeah. My God. Mm. But would you feel sorry then for the farmers?
Sure, the ground is very wet, I've talked to farmers over, I was at a funeral yesterday and I was talking to a few farmers and they can't get cattle out with the, they have grass but they can't get cattle out with the ground is so wet.
And you were saying, Pat, some people weren't able to sow their...
The tillage people down around the country are in dire straits as well. There was a county fellow, he was drawing straw from Wexford and... out of a shed, and he was asking the man he was buying it from, you know, has he much sold for the coming year? And he said he had none sold. And he said, come on out for a walk, and they walked out in the field, and he said to them,
saturated.
The water and the muck was up to his ankles.
Yeah. There's a picture there, Jim.
You can't even get it plowed.
No, sure you wouldn't. There's a picture there of the burn, and it half. You can see a fence. This is the farming section now. We're on page 18 of the Clare Champion. And it says here, over the picture, range of measures needed to bail out farmers after a very wet winter. And the farming organisations were up with the Minister for Agriculture this week looking for various measures of support. And I think, to be fair to the Minister and the government, they've put some measures in place, but probably not enough as what the farmers want. But there's the farmers really, I think, get stuck with credit facilities, and so they're looking for a little bit of support from the banks and from the milk processors to kind of be a little bit flexible with and of course, if farmers can't put their animals out, they'll have to get fodder.
They have to buy fodder.
They'll have to buy, which will be expensive. Yeah. So they're caught between a rock and a hard place. There hasn't been hardly 3 days in a row without rain.
No.
Yeah, since
in East Clare, anyway.
No.
Yeah, not since yesterday. Yeah. So when the weather broke after that good spell in June, it's been pretty bad since.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not a farmer, but I can see where I plan to sow my vegetables that I have no business whatever going near them at the moment.
You would have sowed your potatoes, presumably, at this stage.
You'd have potatoes, you'd have cabbage, you know, onions, the usual things you'd need in the household. Yeah. I just do it as a hobby now, not as anything else. But
you haven't done anything?
Nothing at all, because the place needs, you just can't touch it.
It's going to dry out. Need a few days for it to dry out, and then you need it to dry out again.
Now, a few good days, a good week this time of the year
would dry it out.
Dry it out.
Yeah.
I just see on the page, on the farming section as well, the Clare Credit Union celebrate National Cultivate Week as they continue to increase their presence in the agri-lending market.
Yeah, and they have a big ad there, Jim. You can borrow up to 75,000 over 10 years for farming improvements, I suppose. So fair play to the credit unions. I think the credit unions are getting into the mortgage market in a big time as well. So
yes,
they're proving their worth. And of course, they are community owned.
They are voluntary run and community owned, even though they would have employees, but they would be run. The board runs the credit union, and that's done on a voluntary basis. Yeah. There's a picture there of Siobhan Durek of their credit union with the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnellogue, on page 19. So
I see they're advertising for borrowing for farmers, so they might be fairly busy with the weather that's coming.
They might indeed.
Yes. Okay. We were looking there, Pat, you just mentioned, well, I'm near it, Quakerstown. There's a whole page of photographs, if I can find it.
It was a point-to-point. It's on page 2.
Yeah, the Clare County Hunt, they have an annual... actually, they have three point-to-point meetings. They have two before Christmas. One before Christmas and one after Christmas, and the middle one, and the last one will be on Easter Sunday. Traditionally held over in Dunmoreland for years, 1 year. But now it's up in North Clare, up in Quakerstown, which is up near Boston, up in the Bourne.
Yes.
And there's lovely pictures there of all the
race scores.
The race scores ahead.
The ground isn't as soft up there, Pat.
No, it'll get the ground up there.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, the picture of the week must go to John Kelly, who was up at Quakerstown. It's on page 5 of the living section of the Clare Champion, and a car has gotten stuck up there in Quakerstown, and there's about seven fellas trying to push it to get it out. And there's a tractor about to come up, I think, is going to give a hand as well. It's a classic sort of rural photograph, and the muck and the dirt of the car park. But anyway, it's a great photograph.
Yes, probably, and no better man than John Kelly
to capture the moment.
There's a lovely man at the front of the as well, race on the line, and John Kelly's as well, with two horses there, and they're leading the one of the races in the Quakerstown Pint on Sunday.
I'll have to say, Pat, I was thinking of you over the last few days when looking at the papers ahead of this programme, page 5 of the Clare Champion, to see the lovely job there on the post office field. Now, the job hasn't been done yet. It's a artist's impression, I presume.
Yeah, well, it looks very impressive anyway, Jim. And I suppose Innes will probably get money for it when the rest of the county won't get money.
And it shows...
And this, to see those two buildings?
Yes, two black boxes.
Those two black boxes, they're two new buildings.
The controversial buildings.
No, in the Pernilla Street car park.
Yes.
Yeah, this is the Pernilla Street car park now.
That's in Abbey Street.
Yeah, Abbey Street one is down here, you can't see.
It's the other side of the bridge.
Yeah. It's on the right.
Yeah.
Jim, so, I don't know, do I like, I'm a big fan of walking and all the rest, but this is the only green space in the middle of Venice, and why don't they leave it alone?
Hmm.
Like, they're saying, oh, we're going to protect the wildlife and all that without... it says here, it is expected the development... Part of Venice 2040 will include the creation of a raised walkway, which will open up the town centre location to members of the public without impacting on wildlife. If you put a big path, I know it's going to be raised up off the ground,
But you bring people into the middle of a natural area like that, of course it's going to have an impact. Why don't they just leave it alone? They've got money to burn, and this is the problem.
When I went in this anyway, I just wanted to quit the shop and go away out of it. Jim, I say you probably, it says that the members of the public are going to tennis. You went in this now and you'll go for a walk around here, will you?
No, I would not.
Well, I certainly wouldn't either.
Yes. When I go into Ennis, I go into a cafe and I wait for my wife to... I'm sure a lot of fellas do. Okay, we'll go on from there. I'm looking at page 13 in the Clare Champion and looking at the East Clare page. And there's a number of stories there. There's a number of things. There aren't that many stories from East Clare this week, but there are a few. And one of the top one there on page 13, Dan edits that page, and it's caring for people with dementia. And there's a picture there of the Family Resource Centre, which is really one of the most interesting and helpful and community-minded place in Killaloe.
Yeah.
So many things go on there, and the people there are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. What's news to me, Jim, is there is a dementia advisor in every county now. 6 or 7 years ago, there were only 8 dementia advisors in the country. Now we have 31. And these are presumably people who will advise on how you cope with, how families presumably and helpers can support how you live with people with dementia. So, and maybe a bit of respite. I don't know, do they do a bit of respite as well? But it's a growing phenomenon, unfortunately, in communities, people with dementia. We're living longer, and this is only going to... Official statistics say there are 64,000 people living with dementia in Ireland. Mr. O'Shea estimates the true figure could be as high as 100,000, as thousands remain undiagnosed. Mm. So it's a growing... And so it's wonderful to see, then, that down in Killaloe we have a facility there for, I suppose, the entire region.
Did I see somewhere during the week that they were looking at medication which would allow people to live with dementia on one of the national stations?
Yeah. Likely. I'm sure there are people investigating it all, right?
And I heard something on the radio during the week as well. It was a study done on a number of nuns who had lived past 100 and who...
They have the inside track there, Jim.
They were still teaching. They were still working.
Yeah.
And even though...
Is that the secret?
On x-rays and scans, they had the features that one would expect on a brain scan of someone with dementia. But they didn't have dementia. They were working away. So
So it's the secret. Keep
going.
Keep going for as long as you can.
Yeah. I don't know now. I'm... No expert or anything, but the Family Resource Centre in Killaloe, that's an interesting article to read.
Yeah.
And it's we have been in it looking for studio space for Scariff Bay Community Radio.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be back to them again.
Jim, you're not a forestry owner, are you?
No.
Well, he
knew this story would be coming up, you see. But Pat, it's an interesting one. Council urged to seek roadworks contribution from forestry owners.
Yeah, I suppose if they're cutting up the roads and they probably should be maintaining the roads. Should be giving some contribution towards it.
Well, if that's the case, then should a builder that's lugging a trailer or the likes of DHL or all the couriers that have big vans on the road,
or our own post.
I think it's a bit of a red herring to be sort of singling out.
But when I think about them roads, Luke, they're usually back roads and small roads, they usually get busted up easily.
To be more in our mind now, I think, to get our national elected representatives to give the councils a better allocation for their road budgets.
Mm. Yeah.
And give the councils a little bit of power, because all you read about, and we'll say by being at some of the KMD meetings, is I think they say on average the recommended amount of roadway that you should replace every year is about 11%. Okay? And in Clare, it's currently around 5%.
Mm.
So That basically, you know, if you do 11%, that basically means once every 10 years, yeah, every road will be redone. Yeah. If it stays at 5%, it means every 20 years. Now, as man says, a lot can happen in 20 minutes or 20 weeks, let alone 20 years.
Well, a bad winter can create awful problems. What about this, Luke? A lick of paint would go a long way on Scariff roads. What do you make of that one?
Well, I think it could be short-term gain and long-term pain, because if the plans for Scariff ever get off the ground in relation to all the works, and last week it was in the paper that, you know, the requisite plans had been sent in for funding, I think part of the reason why they haven't done them is because they think that they could be digging up the roads in a few months, and that then the great paint will be gone away with and you'll have to go at it again. Like, there was a plan that Irish Water were supposed to be digging up the streets in Scariff back in January, but at least someone with a brain cell intervened and got them to postpone it until the proposed works will say that, yeah, you know, would be,
but
taking place.
But we could be waiting 2
work.
Years, couldn't we, for those proposed works?
Well,
if not longer.
It depends on the,
yeah,
there's an election coming, of course.
There is, and I'd say
that you'll have to get the money from the from
the government first.
It's national funding. It isn't, yeah, it's not like this isn't one that council will be paying up, you know. But I suppose
that you put a bit of painting on the cushion and that to do the little bits around the
Is it sort of even a kind of a safety issue, like which side of the road and who has the right way? You know, if a car is coming up, we were coming down here now, we're in the GA hall in Scariff, and we have to come through, some of us have to come through Scariff, and the road down is a bit tight in place because of parking and so on. Mm. And if there is a car coming up, you have to leave it up because you'll be verging on. But there is no line, I don't think, on that. I could be wrong now.
Yeah, and in there, when we are going back down, when we come up, go around up
through the square.
Up the square, the lines there are all gone as well.
So maybe Councillor Burke has a point. And of course, Scariff has got an awful lot busier.
It has,
in the last while.
Well, those lines are done by a machine.
They're done by a machine.
So I mean, I imagine they do most of them in a day.
I was thinking Councillor Burke himself would be out with the paintbrush.
Yes.
No.
They do them in a couple of hours.
I was just thinking, so just going back briefly to the forestry, don't we pay road tax?
But where does it go, Jim?
But we'll say the idea of paying road tax with your car means you
can travel the public highways.
It's for the upkeep of the road.
Yeah, but where does that money go? This goes back to my whole point.
It goes to
central funding, and that there isn't enough money coming out of central funding.
Okay.
I don't know, going back to that there, if they're collecting, as Councillor Hayes says, they're collecting between £1 million and £1.5 million worth of timber out of forestry, that they should make some contribution. Tom Kelly, he's
we'll put it to him when he comes back.
But a big factory on the side of a road might be making 2 times that amount of money, and are they supposed to be contributing to the roads? I mean,
that's the truth. Oil lorries, everything that passes.
Exactly, yeah.
And haven't they to contribute to get a license to take the timber out in the first place?
They do. They have to pay a license to the government. So,
which goes to central funds, presumably.
Funnily enough,
well,
the government will give foresters, forest owners, a grant to build an internal road. You can actually build a road into your property.
But it's the road outside.
But it's the road outside that I think Councillor Hayes is worried about.
Adam Hogan.
Adam Hogan, basically.
From Fecal Hurler.
Fitzgibbon Awards is on recently, Jim, only last week, and Adam Hogan was crowned Hurler of the Year for the Fitzgibbon Cup University Championship.
Yeah, brilliant young man.
Yeah. So you heard the Fitzgibbon Hurler of the Year in Fecal, and you heard the
Young Player of the Year.
Young Player of the Year in Scotland.
Yes.
And I think they were marking each other in one of the Fitzgibbon games this year.
Yes, yeah. And they mark each other in training as well,
I believe. Dermot Ryan from Cracklow, who was on the Clare team, was one of the... They obviously go to an All-Stars team as well, so... Dermot Ryan, Shane Meehan, and Mark Rogers also made the All-Stars team. Fitzgibbon or CRC.
And it's coming up to 3 o'clock shortly on this Sunday afternoon, but at four today there'll be a special hurling game in Whitegate. It's a fundraiser. The game is in memory of the late Michael Hines, who was a brilliant young hurler for Whitegate, also for Scariff Community College, where he won an All-Ireland medal, and for UL and for Clare. All of the four will be represented this afternoon in Whitegate, and the funds raised at the match will be for the Limerick Suicide Watch. So we would encourage people to, if you can, get down to Whitegate this afternoon. I think there's going to be tea and whatnot provided, and they're a friendly crew down there anyway. So it's well worth doing, and it's in memory of the late Michael Hines. So that would be
There's also the it comes up in May the other year, Jim, the Darkness into Light, and I think that's going to be in Whitegate as well. I don't think that date, but it's definitely on in May.
And yesterday in part one of Sportsline, Leo and Pat had Michael's mother and aunt, and they had Cathy Kelleher from Bodaic, who is part of the Limerick Suicide Watch. Okay, so that's our fun for today. I wonder, Pat, I'll get to you in a moment. Many thanks to all our panel, to you, Pat, and to Dave, to David.
Thanks, Jim.
And to Luke.
Thanks, Jim.
And we look forward to having John S. back with us next week to complete the picture. But we need a bit of music. We had Ultravox at half time. What delights have you got for us to finish?
This weekend, Jim, it's the 50th anniversary of ABBA winning the Eurovision Song Contest with Waterloo.
Waterloo. Oh, lovely.
So it's 50.
Yes.
50 years.
It's a long time ago. Do you remember, Pat?
We're getting old.
Speak for yourself. David, I thought you were only a young lad.
Well, David doesn't remember Waterloo.
Yeah.
No. Where was it?
It was Brighton, wasn't it? It was 1815, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Waterloo by ABBA.
Yeah.
Okay, Pat, many thanks for that. And thanks to you at home for listening to us. And we'll see you again at 2 p.m. next Sunday. So from us for now, goodbye and God bless.